950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Matt, Sam here. Sam, we in my family had an old school problem here, which I can't remember the last time I actually heard of anyone having to do this. My daughter, who is, since quarantine has taken over, has become the baker. She's been making, you know, cooking a lot of things. We ran out of flour. She literally had to go to a neighbor and ask if you have a cup of flour. Now, that's an old cliche. It's an old tale. I can't remember the last time. I remember when I was a kid having to ask a neighbor for a cup of flour just because we ran out some. But it's you know, I think it's one of those tales that comes from the days when people just didn't have enough flour. So you're just asking, I need something to get by, as opposed to what's today is like, yeah, I guess I forgot to add that to the old the grocery list. And I, my bad. Oopsies. My there. So did you, you know, a good week for you?
It's pretty good. Kayaked the part of the St. Croix for a few hours there.
Hope it wasn't the real bumpy part.
No, it was the smooth part. Okay. It was like right in between like Taylor's Falls and Osceola in Wisconsin, I think.
Okay. So, yeah, relatively flat there. It's not that bad.
It was a good first kayak of the season, so I didn't want to go too hard there.
Well, how far did you go?
It was like 3 or 4 miles, but we kept it pretty leisurely, though.
Well, downhill, downstream or upstream?
Downstream.
Well, 3 or 4 miles.
It's not much. Nah.
You went a block.
Right.
That's always the thing that amazes me about those guys with those canoes back from the days is that you used to go upstream in these things. That's some core strength right there. You're doing your core workout going upstream, and they do that for 10 days at a time. Native Americans, early European explorers, they do that 10 days at a time from sun up, sun down. They're out there rowing away. Yikes. Yeah, I'm not that good. I think I slept for a good chunk of the weekend and just I give up. I did do some walks. I went over to we repeated a walk for the first rare times to Theo Worth, hiked around the lake over there, and then I did the upper part. I know this is weird. The upper part of the lower part of the 9 Mile Creek area. So it's down in Bloomington. It's Moir Park, M-O-I-R, Moir Park, and it's basically the stretch of 9 Mile Creek north of 106 down there. So quite nice. There are some photos of that walk, that first walk from Saturday, up online. Go and peruse. 952-946-6205. Okay, quick note to the people who went out and – now, there's a George Todd Park that someone went out and got a Floyd and made it George Floyd Park. And it looks exactly, the sign doesn't, it doesn't, it's pretty hard to tell that it's, it wasn't actually named George Floyd Park. It's a very inventive name. Now, first thing I want to do is to say, George Todd sounds like a real nice guy. He was, the head of the Parks Commission. They generally did not name, I went and looked at this guy, who he was. They generally did not name parks after people while they were still alive, but he was diagnosed with cancer. He was dying. Apparently, they felt that he'd done so much for the parks that they named him the park. Sounds like a decent enough guy. We probably should find something else to name after him, by all means. But maybe you just keep the name a George Floyd Park on there. I think that that's actually a pretty solid idea. So there's that. But as well, someone mentioned to me, I was informed there is a park downtown in downtown Minneapolis named after a certain President Andrew Jackson. It's Jackson Square Park is the name of the park. And Chris Stiller mentioned this to me. That's a problem. Andrew Jackson was a bastard. Now, that being said, this is an easy fix. We just need someone who has the ability to create the word action. And then it becomes Action Jackson Square Park, our tribute to the great, you know, shoot 'em up movie from the 1980s starring Carl Weathers, Apollo Creed himself. Action Jackson Square Park. That the more I think about it, the more that needs to happen. And you know why? Because I bet you we could get Carl Weathers to come on out here to the park dedication. So you and think about that. One simple word takes it from you know, white guy who is horrible to the Native Americans, horrible to slaves, just a real piece of crud human being, and turns it into a destination park that people, hipsters, will be coming from across the country to get a picture in front of the sign, Action Jackson Square Park. Do it. Do it. You need to do that. Which brings up, once again, a quick little side note here before we get into a lot of news today. Statues, naming buildings after people, that's a way to honor those people. That's not history. If we did this for history, then we'd have the ISIS Federal Reserve Building. Or we'd have statues of Hitler out there, because that's how we learn history, is by erecting, you know, figures that, whether evil or positive, were major impacts on world life. That's, we don't do that, though. We are only supposed to, we only generally put up statues to commemorate events or to honor people. Okay? So, once again, to all these people who are saying, you're erasing history. No, you're not. As a matter of fact, it's quite the opposite. Enough people are learning the real history, not the filtered white European, white supremacist, racist history that's been put forward for all these years as the true history. No, they're learning the real history of these people. And because people are looking at the real history, the first question people are asking is, why do we have a statue to that guy? And only, and I will say it, and I have no problem saying it, only racists are upset that these statues are coming down. Now, I will say this. I can understand why some people would be upset about statues being torn down and stuff like that. I can. But you can say, hey, I want to have torn down the statue, but Columbus had to go. That's actually a very legit statement. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. You can say, you know what, going out there and just ripping down something because you don't like it is probably not the best way to do it, but Robert E. Lee sure as hell didn't deserve a statue, and it needed to go. You can say that. But all these people are saying, you need to put Columbus back up, or you're trying to destroy our history. No, we are actually learning your history, and that's the problem, for you guys at least. Is that you don't want us to know the history. You want us just to basically tell you what you... Columbus, he got here first. The world was flat until he was there. And that he was just a great guy. No, he wasn't. He was a horrible man. Personally responsible for probably 3 to 5 million deaths of indigenous peoples. And his actions led to the slave trade. Dear Lord. Now, you don't honor people. You do not honor people that don't deserve that kind of honor. And stop with this. It's history. It's not history. You know what is history? You know what is history? Bigotry towards the LGBTQ community. At least one step of it. At least one part of it. As in a what can only be really described as a shocker of a case, a bit of a shocker of a ruling. The a very interesting ruling. 6-3, the Supreme Court ruled that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protects LGBTQ employees from being discriminated against on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. The court on Monday issued opinions on two major decisions with far-reaching implications for the civil rights of transgender and LGBTQ individuals. It was a 6-3 ruling. Chief Justice John Roberts and Neil Gorsuch joining the four liberal justices on the majority. By the way, Gorsuch is not. They are not happy on the right with Gorsuch. But I mean, I'm not saying Neil Gorsuch is a great guy. I am not. His pro-business stances are absolutely unforgivable. But, you know, even the blind pig finds a truffle now and then, don't they? Writing for the majority, Gorsuch himself argued that discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity is fundamentally no different than discrimination based on sex. An individual's homosexuality or transgender status is not relevant to employment decisions, Gorsuch wrote. That's because it is impossible to discriminate against a person for being homosexual or transgender without discriminating against that individual based on sex. There you go. We agree that homosexuality and transgender status are distinct concepts of sex, he added later, but as we've seen, discrimination based on homosexuality and transgender status necessarily entails discrimination based on sex. The first cannot happen without the second. The rulings rest a pair of cases here that, one second here, one of the pop-up screens are just delightful. Anyway, it, I love a computer that's old. Let's see here. The rulings rest a pair of arguments the court heard in October, which justices considered were the Title VII of the Supreme Right or the Civil Rights Act of 64, the federal law that prohibits work discrimination applies to LGBTQ and transgender workers. While Title VII bars discrimination on the basis of race, color, national origin, and as well sex and religion, the original bill did not define sex as a term. The Trump administration used that ambiguity to argue the lawmaker's original intent focused solely on protecting women's rights and therefore should be extended to include sexual orientation or gender. This is interesting. I want to read this to you. Here is initially the argument the Trump administration made on this case. And by the way, that's it. Do not fool yourself that these people are not against they are really truly evil people. The question here is not whether Congress may or should prohibit employment discrimination because of sexual orientation, but whether Congress did so in 1964. Title VII's plain language, this court previous decision interpreting the statute and the import congressional conduct over the years made clear that Congress did not. Congress, of course, remains free to legislate in this area, and employers, including governmental employees, remained free to offer greater protections to the workers than Title VII requires. I love that line, by the way. We're telling you not to allow discrimination, but hey, by the way, no one's saying that you can be real, real nice to the gay people. We just don't want the ability for people to completely be absolute jackasses to them. I love how they kind of make it seem like, hey, we're not trying to do anything real evil. Of course you are. The William Barr, U.S. Department of Justice Equal Employment Opportunity Act policy referring to the no applicant or employment or employee of our department will be denied equal opportunity because of sexual orientation, gender identity, or any other non-merit-based factor. But those policy determinators currently left to political and private actors actors, not the court. So it's basically saying that, you know, it's up to the individuals, not the courts. Well, here's the court's ruling. Sometimes small gestures can have unexpected consequences. Major initiatives practically guarantee them. In our time, few pieces of federal legislation rank in significance with the Civil Rights Act of 1964. There, in Title VII, Congress outlawed discrimination in the workplace on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. Today, we must decide whether an employer can fire someone clearly for being homosexual or transgender. The answer is clear. An employer who fires an individual for being homosexual or transgender fires that person for traits or actions it would not have questioned if members of a different sex. Sex plays a necessary and undisguisable role in the decision, exactly what Title VII forbids. Those who adopted the Civil Rights Act must not have anticipated the work would lead to this particular result. Likely, they weren't thinking about the many acts, consequences that have become apparent over the years, including its prohibition against discrimination on the basis of motherhood or its ban on the sexual harassment of male employees. But the limits of the drafter's imagination supply no reason to ignore the law's demands. When the express terms of the statute give us one answer, the extra textual considerations suggest another. It's no contest. Only the written word is the law, and all persons are entitled to its benefits. So basically, that was the argument they were trying to make, that the word sex in the original act, Title VII, just referred to women. But they would have said women if it was just referring to women. And because the term today means a lot more than just man or woman, well, it applies. And, you know, a lot of people did not see that coming. And that was a pretty big shock to see, and especially a 6-3 ruling. I think if it was going to pass, especially – I don't know if you caught the questioning that happened last October. I mean, it was clear that I didn't think there was a chance in the world that this was going to survive. But, you know, that's exactly what did happen. Indeed, it did. The other thing now there's two other ones that I want to make sure I mention here. The first is the Supreme Court did brush off the opportunity to review police immunity cases. Now, it doesn't – you know, it, for the time being, police immunity can't really – they're not going to discuss it. It doesn't mean it can't be legislated. It doesn't mean you can't adjust it. It can't mean that states can't write laws about it. It just means they decided not to visit it in that case. The other one, this one is another bit of a shocker that I was kind of surprised it happened as well. And it involves Trump's legal challenges to sanctuary cities. The Supreme Court today, they left in place a ruling that upheld the bulk of three laws in the cases of sanctuary cities. The Supreme Court on Monday – wait a second here. This computer is just delightful. It's being stubborn. Anyway, maybe at some point it will. I've clicked on it. I've just got to wait for like 10 seconds for it to scroll one thing down. The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday handed President Trump a defeat to his legal showdown with the most populous U.S. state, declined to hear the administration's challenge to sanctuary laws in California that protect immigrants from deportation. The justices left in place a lower court ruling that it helped a bulk of the three laws in the Democratic-governed state that limit cooperation with federal government-enforced authorities. The Trump administration had appealed that court ruling to the high court. Trump seeking re-election on November 3rd has made hardline immigration policies a focus. But now, once again, this is the Supreme Court saying, no, he can be as hard as he wants to be. The reality is states have a right to create sanctuary cities, and the federal government can't go in there and stop them. So, like I said, it was a refusal. That was not a ruling. That was a refusal to hear the case. And so they upheld the lower court ruling, which basically kept the sanctuary city rules in place. So good news, absolutely good news. And I think in the case of the LGBTQ, rights, I think that we can't understate the fact that now we have legal precedent. You can't fire someone for being transgender. You can't fire someone for being gay. And where we are getting more of these rulings that are coming into place now, which you're not going to undo these. Well, granted, let me make sure I'm very clear about something. If Trump wins another freaking election, I wouldn't put him to where he'd force Democrats to resign and install a whole bunch of real uber conservative court justices. You know, then you might be able to revisit it. But the reality is, you know, gay marriage, you've got the case now of gay worker rights. They're being upheld, and this is a big freaking deal. And sure, you can still have that jackass baker in Colorado not make a cake for a gay wedding. But now they're getting to the point where even the Supreme Court and a conservative Supreme Court is now saying, no, this is not right. You should not be discriminating against the gay and transgender population. Well, you know, not only are you basically telling a lot of people that you don't want to do business with them, but at the long run, you eventually we're going to get to the point where you can't discriminate like that on a federal level. Federal government's going to say, no, you can't just openly discriminate against people who are gay or transgender. And you need to get more of a identification on that. And there's more, definitely more hurdles to cross. But this is a big freaking deal today. That was a huge ruling. And like I said, conservatives are furious with Neil Gorsuch right now. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. COVID-19 update when I do come back. Some good news, some bad news. I'll get to that in a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Now, more than ever, we are being faced daily with the topic of human mortality. And for many people, estate planning has been top of mind. Getting your estate planning done now can be easy and cost-effective. Shroman Law offers virtual options for initial consultations so that new clients can safely initiate the process. With many facing uncertain financial situations, Shroman Law also offers affordable fees for legal documents. Learn more at shromanlaw.com. That's shromenlaw.com.
Hi, Gregory Rich, owner of Habitation Furnishing and Design and host of Drinkin' the Style, Saturdays at 7 and Sundays at 5. You know, we're all sitting at home right now, and chances are you've noticed a thing or two that you wish you could change. Well, The Habitation Design staff is here to help. Right now, we're offering free virtual interior design services. It works like this. You guys are home, we're all at home. Let's schedule a virtual walkthrough of your space. Using FaceTime, Zoom, or Skype, one of our degreed professional interior designers will take a look, tell you precisely how to measure your room, then provide you with specific product recommendations, a design plan, and everything you need to make your space beautiful and functional. So we've all got the time. Why don't we take advantage of it? Call Habitation at 952-426-3548. That's 952-426-3548 and schedule your virtual design appointment today.
The Minnesota Army National Guard salutes the high school graduating class of 2020. We recognize all of your hard work and the resilience you've demonstrated during this historic time for our country. Those are the traits of a great citizen soldier. You can continue to stand out and be a leader in your community as a soldier in the Minnesota Army National Guard. Learn more about the benefits of part-time service in the Army National Guard at NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Let's go into COVID-19 because I got good news and bad news. But I'm going to start with... I want to start with the bad news here. And... This is the only response you need to give to anyone who has been one of those people from the get-go, you got the seasonal flu, it's no big deal. All right. World War One. We're all aware of that. The U.S. did not enter onto the side of the Allies in World War One until it was, relatively late in the war, 1917. And the date actually was the Congress declared war on the Axis powers of World War One on April 6th of 1917. The war ended on November 11th of 1918. It's a total of 585 days. I want to repeat that. It was 585 days. The United States losses during that time were 117,466. Now, to get it into context, the top four things that had killed Americans as far as one specific thing. The worst was the flu of 1918, killed, a few million people. The second worst thing was the Civil War, hundreds of thousands of people. World War II was somewhere around 400,000 people died. In World War II, but then it was World War One. It was World War One because number four on the list now is coronavirus. The first coronavirus death in the U.S. was on February 6th of this year. Today is June 15th, a total of 131 days. Now, I want to repeat the days. The United States was in World War One for 585 days. There's a monument to World War One in pretty much every freaking town in this country about the great sacrifice we as a country made in World War One. That was over 565 days. We have now... COVID-19 deaths, 117,951. That was as earlier today from World Meters, who have actually had a pretty decent tracking mechanism in regards to the deaths and case count for coronavirus. More people have now died from coronavirus than died in World War One. Coronavirus is now the fourth worst disaster to happen to this country. As far as death count goes, we are clearly going to end up over 200,000 dead in this country because of coronavirus. In a world where there are plenty of countries which have not had hardly any cases comparatively. In some cases, countries who have effective leadership have mitigated the risk down to almost nil. That's remarkable. it's remarkable because how bad Trump and the administration are doing at dealing with this. And right now, you have state after state of Republican states who reopened everything, and their case counts are exploding, and the first thing they say is, well, we're not shutting it down again. Holy God, what's the number going to be? I pray to God we don't even get close to World War II's number. But reminder with the flu of the flu outbreak of 1918, it wasn't just one wave. It was not just two waves. It was three waves. The second wave was the worst, but the third wave came that went from late of 1918 into 1919, and that did a lot of damage too. Where will this end up? I don't know, but, you know. Hey, dude, man, I'd be concerned about losing as many people as World War I, but I want to go to the beach. Yeah. Wow. Wow. That is the most sobering number when I realized that today. Now, it's not just bad news. Things in Minnesota truly are actually getting better. The number of Minnesotans hospitalized for COVID-19 has dropped to levels not seen since late April, reflecting a continued decline of at least the first wave of the pandemic. The Minnesota Department of Health on Monday reported 535 people were hospitalized for the infectious disease caused by novel coronavirus, including 186 people needing intensive care. Now, once again, by all means, we're not making light of that 186 people or the 353 that are in the hospital. The state also reported six COVID-19 deaths and 230 lab-confirmed cases, bringing total so far to the pandemic to 1,304 deaths and 30,693 cases. The majority of COVID-19 deaths have been in Minnesotans who are age 70 and older, who had underlying health conditions such as diabetes, asthma, or diseases of the lung, kidney, heart, or immune system. 1,034 of the deaths out of the 1,304 1,034 of the deaths involved residents of long-term care and assisted living facilities. The declining hospital numbers are encouraging. On May 28th, the state reported 606 COVID-19 patients admitted to hospitals. Major metro hospitals in the Twin Cities are reported running out of intensive care beds around that time, due in part to the peak of the COVID-19 cases. Officials, and by the way, when are we having the parade for Governor Walz? Can I just, as much as, you know, you hear a lot of Republicans screaming about Governor Walz failed us in coronavirus. Governor Walz did exactly what he was saying he was going to do. He did exactly. You guys on the right, I'm sorry he was successful, but stop trying to vilify a guy who basically did exactly what he said he started out to do. And God willing, we don't see another surge here. I have a feeling we will. But the guy has brought down this initial wave has dramatically gone down. And the reality is, you know, we did exactly what Governor Walz intended on doing. This is good news. And I, once again, not making light of anyone that has coronavirus. I'm not dismissing the people that have gone through it and all my best on that. Not dismissing the dead, for goodness sakes, no. But the whole goal of this was to flatten the curve, and we did. And it got close. We started getting close to having to crack open the emergency ICU beds. But the reality is, it doesn't sound like we got too far down that path, and things are starting to reverse. Minnesota reported another 5,031 tests on Sunday, well below the average of more than 10,000 tests on the recent days. Daily figures reported by Minnesota Department of Health on Mondays have typically been lower during the pandemic. Even so, the single-digit number of deaths of COVID-19 is the lowest reported in Minnesota since April 13th. Yay, that's good. Although, once again, still six, and all my best to those families out there. Positive trends in Minnesota appear to be coming amid a worsening national picture with respect to the pandemic's increases in cases in some states. Hospitalizations has raised concern about the second wave. Case growth in some states, such as Arizona, came after the end of the statewide stay-at-home orders. I have had elderly relatives who lived in Arizona. May God have mercy on that state if it starts ripping through those retirement centers. And not talking about like a retirement home, but like Sun City, the retirement communities out there. God forbid if it starts running through them, because you can't even comprehend what the death count would be, especially since how lethal it is with people 70 and older. So, bad news, we're hitting a threshold. We're now the fourth biggest death count of all things that have happened to U.S. citizens with coronavirus. But on the good side, at least here in Minnesota, Governor Walz's plan is working. That's a good thing. Nationally, this is going to get worse before it gets better. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When I come back, an update quickly on the police in Minneapolis, but as well, I got a story that's gone under the radar, but you guys need to be paying attention to this one. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, this is Chad Hobart with Social Media MN. If you're running for office or a grassroots ballot initiative, getting out door-to-door made a lot of sense before coronavirus. Progressive candidates historically win elections with one-to-one voter contact, door-knocking, and by organizing. With coronavirus, candidates and ballot initiatives need to pivot and recalibrate with a digital marketing strategy to provide one-to-one voter contact and organizing opportunities. An effective digital strategy will likely determine if your race goes blue this year or whether you're singing the blues. So, if you want to be singing Hail to the Chief on Election Day, Social Media MN can help. For a hassle-free consultation, contact us today at 763-244-4058. That's 763-244-4058. Or visit us online at socialmediamn.com. That's socialmediamn.com.
Not only does Rudy Luther Toyota have a great selection of new vehicles, but Rudy Luther is also one of the largest volume Toyota certified used vehicle dealers in the country. Quality and low prices are benchmarks of Rudy Luther. They offer a 7-year, 100,000-mile warranty and feature incredibly low interest rates. This June, you can get financing at 0% on certified used RAV4s and Camrys for well-qualified buyers. But remember, this offer is only good for June. Find your next car today at Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
I'm Rick Unger. You've heard the screamers, you've heard the shouters, the haters, the berators. Well, now it's time to listen to a real conversation, a rational conversation. Now it's time for the Rick Unger Show.
Listen to the Rick Unger Show every weekday from 5 to 7 p.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Stream at am950radio.com or search KTNF on the TuneIn app.
I just got the text message. We need more flour, Dad.
Do we?
Do we have a cup of flour around here I could bring home with me? I just imagine me like going driving on the road with a cup of flour in my hand. And
should we see if we can get listeners to call in if they have cups of flowers that they
No, don't. You're more than welcome to call in, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. But I do not need flour. I will go pick up some flour. Thank you very much to the members. We do appreciate you, members. Flour or not, I do appreciate you. Ruth in Maple Grove, Edward in Buffalo, Michael in Minneapolis, Marie in Coon Rapids, Dave in Long Lake, Daniel in Minneapolis, Heidi in Minneapolis, Nancy in Minneapolis, John in South St. Paul, Daniel in Eden Prairie, Steve in Saugus, hello, Boston. Hello, Massachusetts. Love you guys out there. I lived in Rhode Island, Wickford, and East Greenwich for a while. Maxine in Minneapolis, Michelle in Beverly and St. Paul. Thank you very much for becoming members. We do appreciate that. Now, you too can become a member of AM 950. Go to am950radio.com, click on the member page, and you can go make a donation, either a one-time or recurring payment. We do appreciate it because, once again, keeping AM 950 on the air during the 2020 election cycle is a priority. And reminder, we do have special members-only content available for you to listen to. That's, once again, you can only get access to it as a member, including the last week's Tom Hartman interview that we did, which was very good. Go check it out. Once again, am950radio.com. That's am950radio.com. Find out how you can become a member of AM 950. And thank you once again very much. The 911 dispatchers, this is kind of a story that when it broke, I was a little kind of bothered by this. 911 dispatcher watching real-time footage of George Floyd's arrest in South Minneapolis was so alarmed by the police officer's actions that she called a supervisor who did not immediately respond to the scene, according to a newly released phone recording. Now, I'm not exactly sure how she had real-time coverage. Was it one of the corner cameras? Because I know MnDOT's got those cameras everywhere. Was it – did she have access to the car camera? Did she access to the body camera? I can't tell. The recordings of a phone conversation between the unidentified dispatcher and the Minneapolis police supervisor were released on Monday on the city's website. They raised yet more questions about the department's handling of Floyd's death, which ignited worldwide protest over racial injustice and police brutality. I don't know You can call me a snitch if you want, but we have the cameras up for Squad 320's call, and I don't know if they had to use force or not, but they got something out of the back of the squad, and all of them sat on the man. So I don't know if they needed you or not, but they haven't said anything to me yet, the dispatcher said. Now, I want to stop right there, because the dispatcher clearly is walking into this conversation with this police manager that by merely calling out bad behavior, the dispatcher is seeing on the camera that the feeling is I'm going to be considered a snitch. And there you go. That's Bob Kroll's police department right there. That even when a police dispatcher says, what are these guys doing? Something is really wrong here. They should not be doing this. But they're afraid to bring it up because they're going to be called a snitch. You're snitching. You're snitching on the copper boppers. Come on, man. The fact that that's in there tells you everything you need to know about the depth of the problems within the police department. That a 911 dispatcher can't look at a camera and see, oh my God, what are these guys doing? I'm going to call the supervisor, and the supervisor's like, hey man, you're snitching. You're a snitchy snitch. God, that is just disappointing on such a level. It's so disappointing. Now we go to the supervisor response. Yeah, but they haven't said anything yet, just a takedown, which doesn't count, but I'll find out. The dispatcher comes back. No problem. We don't get to ever see it. When we see it, we're just like, well, that looks a little different, but sounds good. Bye. That's what the manager says. It's not clear whether the supervisor responded to the scene, but none were present as an unresponsive Floyd was loaded onto an ambulance before he was pronounced dead, as captured by this bystander video. So once again, let's go through this here. The bystanders are looking at the police and saying, for God's sakes, let the man breathe. The dispatcher is looking at the police and saying, what are these guys doing? So bothered by this that she, even though she knows he or she is going to be called a snitch, that they basically, you know, that they contact the manager and say, you better go check this out. And reminder, when EMTs got there, the police story was, well, they were, he was fine. He got to the hospital. He had a medical incident. They got there. He said, no, he's in full cardiac arrest. They were like, what do you mean this guy's not breathing? Everyone but the police officers involved and their manager now thought something was going wrong here. The only people that thought this was good cop work are the cops. So, department spokesman John Elder declined to comment, citing the ongoing probe into Floyd's death. May 25th, incident began with police being called after about a counterfeit $20 bill, ended with, well, Floyd getting murdered in the street by Derek Chauvin, the since-fired officer who was captured on cell phone video pressing his knee into Floyd's neck for 9 minutes. He faces murder and manslaughter charges in the man's death. Three other officers who were present were also terminated and charged criminally. Under the department rules, anytime an officer uses force while on duty, he or she must notify a supervisor who typically responds to the scene. Dispatch data shows that the first supervisor on the scene, Sergeant David Ploger, who didn't arrive on scene until 34 minutes after officers first encountered Floyd. Ploger is a supervisor in the 3rd Precinct's Middle Watch. It's unclear whether he was the supervisor in the recording. The latest data release also included the transcript of two 911 calls made by bystanders to report the officers involved, including one by an off-duty city firefighter who happened to be on the scene. So I want to make sure we also say this for the record. There's even an off-duty firefighter who is saying, what the hell are you morons doing? The Minneapolis cops are the most corrupt, vile organization I've seen in a long time. And it's not because of Arredondo. It's because of Bob Kroll. This is Bob Kroll's mess. And I'm sorry, as a city and as a state, we should take his nose and put it in his mess. That's what we should do to Bob Kroll. Because this is unfreaking excusable. 911 dispatcher, the EMTs, the bystanders, off-duty firemen, for God's sakes. Your police department is more than likely going to get completely dismantled. And it's not because of rampant liberals. It's because no one trusts you. No one trusts you guys. That protect and serve crap you got on your cars is more of a comical joke than anything else. And it's Bob Kroll's police. That's what it is. It's Bob Kroll's police. They say it's, oh, well, 14 officers. Well, 7 officers have left. 14 officers have put in paperwork to leave. I mean, I'm sorry. That's more of a reflection of the police department, not the city. Well, they don't like us here. Yeah, because of why you keep killing people. And like I said, even the 911 dispatcher, what are you guys doing? Melanie is in Minneapolis. She wants to chime in. Welcome on in, Melanie.
I really am thrilled that, I mean, wow, we're having so much opportunity for, like, huge paradigm shift. And so I'm really glad you brought up the whole snitch thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, the most recent take on that was NPR this weekend said the fantastic turn of phrase, honor among the dishonorable. Isn't that nice?
Well, that's a good phrase. No, I think that it's...
And then I thought back to, like, well, what do I think about this? And I'm like, oh, prison rules.
Oh, it is.
Right?
Oh, it exists.
And then I thought, oh, wow, I'm even going back further to recovery concerns in the 70s and the unspoken rules of the dysfunctional family. So, I mean, like, we so need to get rid of this, like, I mean... Time for people to grow a spine and speak up.
Well,
thank
a lot
you.
Of people, Melanie, a lot of people are. I like your comparison to the prison snitch system.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. I love your comparison to that. That is because isn't that just the mentality? And I'm sure Bob Kroll's got some. You know, testosterone-laden movie where to be the bad guys, you got to become the bad guy. Sort of mantra carved in wood over his toilet or something of that nature. No, you guys are... this is the actual recording of the 911 dispatcher calling... Derek Chauvin and the other officer's supervisor and saying, you might want to go over and check this out. I don't know. You can call me a snitch if you want, but we have the cameras up for squad 320's call, and I don't know if they had to use force or not, but they got something out of the back of the squad, and all of them sat on the man. You can call me a snitch. So clearly the anticipation of the 911 dispatcher was that by bringing up mistakes that the officers were making on the scene and that being on tape, that they were being a snitch. God, you can't make this up. And like I said, I mean, for every person that comes on out and says, okay, you know, police reform, yes, but don't get rid of the Minneapolis Police Department. Then you get a crap story like this and you're like, geez, just dismantle it and rebuild it. Make them all... reapply for their jobs. Oh, and by the way, do not hire Bob Kroll. Dude, just go away. You are just, the mustache of evil. That's what that dude is. There's another story, and I want to get to this really quick here before we go to the break, and I got some music coming up here. Dicamba. Do you know what Dicamba is there? Have you heard about this?
No, I don't think I have.
It's a broad-spectrum herbicide, first registered in 1967. Brand names and formulas for the herbicide included Denat, Banvel, Diablo, Oracle, Vanquish. This chemical compound is a chlorinated derivative of oenisic acid. Around 2016, Dicamba's use came under significant scrutiny due to its tendency to spread from treated fields to neighboring fields, causing damage. Now, Dicamba... this was where the first problems came up, where people who were growing soybeans were noticing their soybean plants were dying. And when you apply this product to the fields, it can kind of evaporate and transfer to neighboring fields. Well, it was bad enough already, but what's happened is, one, farmers are using a heck, because you know, companies got to get them to use the pesticides and the herbicides. The companies have put out a lot of money to get people to use them, so farmers are using more and more of it, and they're using it more and more later in the year. And it's actually starting to have a pretty significant amount of damage done to our soybean crop. But because they're also using more of it, all of a sudden, the health risks are coming up. A group that won, actually, let's see here. This is, there's a court battle going on. The Ninth Circuit Court has issued an order directing the EPA to respond tomorrow to the emergency motion filed late last week by groups seeking to stop the use of dicamba this growing season. These groups say the court should hold the EPA and its administrator, Andrew Wheeler, in contempt for allowing the continued use of the herbicide. Now, if you didn't hear, the court basically said, this is too dangerous. You can't, the EPA didn't, they didn't do enough to regulate this herbicide. So they stepped in, they said you can't use it. But because so many people had bought this herbicide, and because the Trump administration just doesn't care, the EPA basically took that Ninth Circuit court ruling and said, ignore it. You can keep applying what you've purchased. We won't sell anymore, but you can keep applying what you've purchased, which for some people is a year's worth of product. So basically it's saying we're going to ignore the court ruling. National Farm Family Coalition, which includes the Center for Food Safety and the Center for Biological Diversity, called for an emergency motion in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in California late Thursday. The motion claims the EPA lacks the authority to issue a dicamba registration cancellation that allows the use of existing stocks on hand. The groups want the court to hold the EPA and the Wheeler in contempt. The court documents claim no dicamba spraying is allowed because of the court order, but the EPA remained silent for 5 days and opted to mitigate the court's decision, brazenly attempting to tailor the court's vacular to its liking, effectively allowing dicamba to be used for the rest of the spraying season. On Friday, two of the companies whose products were involved in the lawsuit, Corteva and BASF, filed motions to intervene in the case. Corteva says it wants to preserve its rights and the rights of customers to use the weed control technologies. BASF says it acted because of the sudden and severe financial impact that the court's ruling could have on farmers. Well, now, can I just make sure I make the point here? You guys sold the toxic chemicals to the farmers. You guys told them it's safe, it's good, use this, this is great. You can use it more often, you can use it there. Not only were you hurting other farmers, namely the soybean farmers, but now because you basically told them to spray, 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 you're actually adding some health problems for consumers on these products. And now you're basically, even though the Ninth Circuit Court has basically said you can't use it, you're saying ignore the court, go do what you want to do. Wow. This is not over. And by the way, this dicamba stuff, it's in diluted quantities, it's apparently not dangerous. Now, I know some people say, well, any kind of chemical is dangerous. I understand that. But if it's used as it was originally intended, it doesn't sound like it's nearly as dangerous, but it's the fact that it's been ramping up and used more and more and more and more often throughout the entire year that is making this a huge problem. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Some music. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
I'm Candy Broffel, publisher of the Twin Cities edition of Natural Awakenings magazine and host of Green Tea Conversations, a new show for people who are on a journey to take responsibility for their health and play a more active role in their family's well-being. Join me every Sunday at 10 a.m. as I interview local experts who share the latest in natural holistic approaches in a fun and informative way. So grab a cup of tea and join the conversation as we awaken to natural health. Visit us at naturaltwincities.com.
Even though these are challenging times, All Energy Solar is still committed to providing you a cost-effective, environmentally friendly energy system through their zero-contact protocol. Solar remains a great value and long-term investment, but some of the incentive programs will be expiring soon. All Energy Solar can walk you through the entire process. They can evaluate your property by phone or webinar and can even complete preliminary design work without visiting your home. So start saving on your energy bill today and visit allenergysolar.com.
Hi, Alex of Better Futures Minnesota. Does your business or organization need janitorial services, lawn care, or snow services? Obtain a free, no-obligation estimate from Better Futures Minnesota when you mention that you heard about us on AM 950. Our supervised, hardworking, and affordable crews will handle your interior and exterior building and property maintenance needs while you help men in your community transform their lives and walk on a positive path to success. It's a win-win. To learn more, go to betterfuturesminnesota.com under Business Services.
Get down, get down. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I'm trying to kind of get back into normalcy a little bit here because we've had such a rough few months. And we started playing music when the coronavirus was in its height to try to give us something positive to get out of the show. Of course, we didn't want to do this during the proceedings going around in the wake of the George Floyd death. But we started playing some more music last week, and I'm going to continue to do so because I want to go out with something positive, at least get you tapping your foot or something like that. So I believe we got New Order here today. Yeah, let's hit this. Let's get some music going. There you go. Regret. Have a good one. We will be back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.